And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is What's Up Phoenix, starring Chris Gray. I love saying that, Chris.
What's up, Phoenix?
Hey, you even say it better. And of course, in studio, we have none other than our favorite of all time, Don Goldwater.
I just love how you say that. I wish Don was here. I'd like to meet this guy. Maybe I'd get his autograph someday.
But you don't inhale.
No.
Okay, anyway.
I don't inhale over there down there. You know what you need here, let me tell you what.
I don't know what that is, but it sounded pretty good.
Oh, Larry the Cable Guy. You know, one of the things I wanted to bring up was we have about 300,000 to 400,000 registered voters in the city of Phoenix. And the last election, 73,000 people decided who the mayor and their town council was. This is one of the reasons why they keep talking about moving the elections to the even number years and stuff like that. You know, folks, this is your pocketbook. This is your town. This is your decision. This government and this type of government only works when people participate. And if you are unwilling to participate, then you're going to get the type of government that you deserve. And walking into the studio right about now is the world-famous lady in red, Peggy Neely. How are you doing today?
I'm great. A little warm, but good.
Well, good. Good. Yeah, it was a little warm last night. Our power went out. I guess a lot of people lost power last night.
I voted no for that heat.
Yeah, I did too.
I voted yes for the rain.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And I was in Flagstaff avoiding it all. No, I was actually in the rain in Flagstaff. However, and you're supposed to ask, what was I doing in Flagstaff?
What were you doing in Flagstaff?
I was at the Cardinals camp because we have we had some media credentials from our sports show, and they look in pretty good the very first day, and they draw big crowds out there.
They do.
I was just really impressed.
My wife's up there trying to get pictures of Larry Fitzgerald, the Arizona Gazelle.
It was very cool, though. It's very organized, very neat. You should get up there, and I think it's a lot of fun.
I'm really excited. I want to see what this new quarterback's about. Well, yeah. Let's get into it because we got more important things to talk about.
Oh, yes. And welcome, Peggy Neely, to the show. This is great.
Thanks for having me. This is a great honor to be able to come on and tell you a little bit about myself.
Well, let's start there. Talk a little bit about what you're doing currently, who you are, and then we'll get into some questions.
Well, yeah, let's go back to who I am. And basically, for those that aren't out there, they've seen me in a lot of forums out there in the public for a lot of years. But I grew up in southwestern Colorado, so was on a farm. So hard work is not something that is new to me. Having been on the farm, that's where a lot of the values that are instilled in me came from. You know, number one, if you work on a farm, everyone knows that that's hard work. Number two, it was instilled in me that your word is your bond. So once you say yes, no, whatever it is, you live with that. And number three, you leave a place better and you found it. My husband and I basically went to Denver, got married, moved to Denver, and that's where we started our family. And there I was able to work in commercial contracting, and we decided that we would move to Arizona back in 1990 because we felt like we had the opportunity to be as close to home from Colorado, where we grew up, as we were in Denver. And that's when I came down here. And in 1990, we brought our two girls, started our family involved down here. And I would say the day I got here, I began looking around at what opportunities that I had to make that difference. And so we had a daughter that was in school, one that was going to be in school. And I got involved because family is really important to me. So we've been a family for more than 34 years. And I'm pretty proud of that.
Congratulations. Oh, that is phenomenal. Here's a question I started off with at least one out of the two times. The beginning with Jennifer. The three greatest challenges that you see for the city of Phoenix as mayor, what are they?
It's about the economy. Jobs, jobs, jobs. And two, it's about controlling our budget and making a determination. Is City Hall going to represent itself or represent the taxpayers? And number three is greater transparency in all we do at City Hall.
Well, that makes sense.
Let me dig into that a little bit for a second, because same question I'm asking everybody else. We have a form of government, city government, where essentially over the last period of time, the manager really has been the decision maker out there, and the elected officials have, I'm not going to say rubber stamp, but like when they do the budget and stuff like that, when the city manager does the budget and then passes up to the mayor and the city council. This is not a line item budget that comes into the city council. This is a summary. Do we need to either control the manager, restructure his job, do away with this type of government so that the elected officials, the people who are representing the people, are regain control of the city? Because it doesn't
people
seem
making
like
the
that.
Decisions.
Right. And that kind of comes into the 12 reforms for 12 that I put out last week, which is we need to make sure that our budget is something that we have a higher say. I look specifically at the amount of money that we're financing. You're right. We get a very high-level budget. Geez, it's balanced, but we don't get into the departments and what – we get to hear a little bit about the programs that they're going to keep, they might be cutting. We need to have more control of that. And they fall under two areas of my platform. Number one, controlling our budget. We need to be able to, one, make sure if there's going to be a tax increase, that that tax increase can happen in 24 hours. I didn't vote for the food tax last time. But the problem was we didn't ask the public. We let a few people know. So greater transparency in this budget process. And number two, when we came to the budget this year, over $50 million, you would think that it was a cakewalk. In other years, when we've had $20 to $30 million, we have to really think hard about what we're going to do. Why was it a cakewalk? Because we used one-time credit card entries to be able to balance it. What we did was we said that we can make this happen, but with the continued food tax, with the ability to finance City Hall one more time, like a lot of people did out there in the refinancing boom, they financed themselves right out of debt, right out of a home. So we better be careful how we're going to do that. So in some of my reforms, I'm saying we need to see when we're going to have a budget presented to council and the mayor, that we have more say about how we use those tools for leasing and for financing on a long-term basis.
Well, how do you get more control over that then? Do you have to pass something, or is it just better leadership?
Well, I think it's leadership, number one. But number two, I think you have to go back to when our forefathers looked at this charter, 1913. They didn't have a whole lot of thought about, wow, there's going to be an internet system, there's going to be television. They were really thinking about, can I have a quick train ride? Can I have telephone? So we need to get back to looking at today the way that we can communicate with the public. And there is no reason that we should have a budget that we can't see even the high level until it's fully passed. What you see is the budget recommendation for the reductions in our departments is what people are looking at when they're approving, you know, coming and commenting on our budget. We have to change that. We need to make sure that we're being forward and open with the way the process is happening.
And how likely would you be able to change that?
I truly believe that not only can we change it, but I think it has to be done by charter. Why? Because we have one employee, and that's the city manager. And I think that we need to change a lot of issues in our charter. One, I truly believe in the strong city manager form of government because it really does give us professionals that are overseeing it. But the one employee we can deal with is that city manager. And so we need to go back in there and tweak it and make sure that it has those things in it that will allow us to be able to be a stronger government. And I think you'll also see in it that I believe that we need to talk about, do we need to standardize our elections? Don, I know that you probably see this as something near and dear to your heart, so that they're on the regular election years. So think about my 12 charter changes for 12. I'm asking we talk about charter changes and they be put on the ballot in 12, which is a presidential election. Mm-hmm. So all of the people that are voters in our community can look at it.
And we talked a little bit about that before you came on the air, that the last election we have 300,000 to 400,000 registered voters in the city of Phoenix, and 73,000 voters decided who were going to be the leaders of the city of Phoenix. And I agree, we need to take the elections and we'll save money if we put them to the standard dates. So that'll help the city. We'll give the option for more people to get involved with not only state, but county and local governments and hopefully school board elections and stuff like that too. The more people that are involved, the more people, the better government we have. I wanted to ask one thing on your signs. Peggy Neely, jobs, 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 jobs. Let's talk about jobs.
I'd love to talk about
how
jobs.
Do we get jobs? You know, people are not coming to Arizona because the cost of living and the regulations and stuff like that are not favorable to companies like, say, in Texas or Oklahoma and stuff like that that have a lower cost of living, lower cost of doing business. How do you bring jobs in the city of Phoenix?
Well, number one, we all know that government doesn't create them, but we need to create an environment that is inviting to them. And I guess, Don, what I would tell you is I've talked to a lot of businesses that have come to District 2, one of them being one that came from California. And they were going to move here in – they started looking in 2007, and they were looking at some of the areas that have been highly competitive for us. One was they were looking at Austin – they were looking at Tulsa, Portland, Denver, and Phoenix. We won. Why? When you ask them, why did you choose us? One, they believed we had affordable real estate. And for those of us that have been in real estate, in 2007, our real estate was still at a pretty high level.
Comparatively, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Number two, we had great schools. And I think that we missed the point of talking about some of the great things that we have going on in this city, such as, you know, it has not been great for everyone to go through the downturn in the real estate market, but that's a huge marketing tool. We have an affordability, both in the residential and the commercial, that we need to start talking about.
Right.
We saw it back in the 1990s when savings and loans went away. We have affordability, but we're not selling that. And lastly, they told me that they believed that they had a readily available source of employees to work for them. They were not only a national headquarters in the Americas, but they're a international company. And they chose Phoenix, Arizona. And that's what I've seen when I've worked with businesses up there, is they want to see that, number one, that you're interested in them being here,
mm-hmm.
and number two, that there are elements that you tell them that we have to offer. We have left working with what our strengths are. We don't talk about the great things we have to offer here in Phoenix, and it's time we start changing that tune. Phoenix is a great place to be. No one better to sell that than yourself.
Hey,
but
I
can I can tell you that I will work day in and day out to make sure that we get that message out. But let me talk a little bit more about the job side of it. We have to become much more regional. I served as the chair of Maricopa Association of Government. While there, what I realized, we can no longer have our boundaries. And as long as we have the wall and we're going to compete with our neighboring sister cities, we're never going to be able to make this region what it should be. So I believe on economic development, we should stop competing with one another, become a Texas and compete for the jobs. And that's what Texas has done well. And, you know, they figured out how they can bring people there. We've got as many great elements in Arizona as Texas does, but we need to stop worrying about when they get to Phoenix, they're competing with Phoenix and Chandler and Glendale, and say, we want this company. How are we going to go after it? And if they want to be in Glendale, let's let them be there.
You know, half my family's out of Texas, out of Amarillo, and the one thing I can say about Arizona and Phoenix over Texas, well, there's a lot of things I could say, but we have a lot better Mexican food here.
I'm hungry, man.
And the barbecue here is so much better. I'm sorry, Lyndon Johnson, you don't know anything about barbecue.
Yeah, I don't think he's
listening. And it's a dry heat, not a humid heat.
Oh, I'll tell you what, it is, you know, I remember being in Austin and in the summertime, and I was drier in the shower than I was when I got out.
That's right.
Now, we had some issues on the police force.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just, you're the expert on that issue, so why don't you get into it?
Well, that's kind of my question has been because since I have family in law enforcement and I actually spent a little time in law enforcement, I figured out that wasn't for me.
That's how we got to be friends and found me on a street corner. I'm just kidding.
But
there goes my career.
The tax increase to hire law enforcement officers, you know, and then they started hiring some, and then they started taking pay cuts. And, you know, the heavy – either we have too many law enforcement officers or we don't. You know, what is your stand with that?
Well, number one, Prop 1, I think is what it was called at the time that we came in for more fire and police, right, was something that we believed was very important. But we did some mistakes in that. Number one, everyone was looking at, geez, look what growth is doing. It's growing so fast. Our leadership believed that we needed to bring on the officers and the firefighters quicker than what the dollars had come in. So what you're beginning to see now is they're trying to backfill because we now have lower collection rates than we thought, and the projections they were looking at were going to be higher. So we have these officers and these firefighters, and we're trying to figure out, since those are the dollars coming in to give us additional officers and firefighters, how we're going to stopgap that. So some of what you're seeing there is the fact that we didn't do a good job at projecting. And unfortunately, that's one of the problems with government is we never projected that we're going to have a downturn. And when that happens, we always think that things are going to be great. We don't look at what next year's going to bring, and that put us in a problem area. So this is how I feel. The Berkshire review was something that I said we have to do something with our public safety. Not that we don't need more officers, but we need to be more effective with what we're doing. When we started our big budget downturn, the budget portion of fire and police was over 80% and courts. So that's a huge amount. You have 20% of your general fund that you can use on your other areas. We need to find efficiencies that we do things better, not eliminate officers, but do it better. And I would much rather, and this is a tone that a lot of people don't like to hear, boots on the street. We want them on the streets. I think we need to figure out what can be done administratively that will allow us to have more officers. But at the same time, we have to look at a department that there becomes a cap, that it's not exceeding the rest of the city. It wasn't to eliminate officers, but it was a way to be able to find a way to maximize what we're doing in police and fire. I think we have wonderful police and fire, but we have to find a way that it's not overtaking the remainder of the city budget.
Now, you mentioned efficiency. So how would you do that? I mean, is that the leadership of the police and fire departments to be able to either hire the appropriate consultants? I mean, there's things called like total quality management, Lean and Six Sigma, which would help create that efficiency. Is that something you'd recommend?
Well, I actually did, and they already have done the report for police, and it's called the Berkshire Report, and it was quite lengthy. And unfortunately, this is what I want to give you an example. We were talking about the difference in how we were going to stop gap between fire and police, and one of our managers in fire was presenting to the police or to the council, and he goes, he wanted to bring in some more grants to be able to bring firefighters on. And I 100% agree, if we can find grants, we ought to do that. The problem with the grants is they're only good for 3 years. So at the end of 3 years, you got to figure out how you're going to continue to pay that. So my question was, how are we going to pay for those firefighters after the end of the third year? And their comment to me was, well, we'll use the efficiencies we find within the fire department to pay with those. Now, that comes back to the original thing when we talk about the budget. I looked at these efficiency studies as something that we could look at an overall way to be able to become more effective and also try and make sure that we sort of cap what the department was. We could have more officers, but we're not overextending ourselves. Well, I think our managers and department heads look at it as a way that, oh, the savings we'll get to keep in our department. And so it's a problem because we have always built these silos even within our budget that if we have it in our budget, we get to keep it. So there's a mindset that has to change.
Gotcha. Now, we only have maybe about 5-6 minutes left, but let me ask you this. I asked other two candidates the same question. I'm a CPA, and this is something near and dear to my heart, in that I have a lot of clients and there's a lot of businesses out there, and it's just so much heavy compliance going on for the small business owner. And on behalf of them, what could you tell them about how can you ease up on some of this enormous compliance? And these small businesses just do not have enough resources to continue with more and more compliance day in, day out, year in, year out. It's getting absolutely sort of insane, government compliance.
Well, and I think when you look at what we at the city have compliance in is the first stop we need to look at, because that's what we can take care of. We need to have a one-stop shop that you can move through the system very easily. I would like us to be the most competitive city in anywhere in the United States. And some of that's going to come from what we're charging for our permitting system. But, you know, sometimes we put regulations in. I can remember back in the 90s when I was a citizen and we were putting the backflow devices as something that we required everyone to do. A very expensive cost to people. And those backflow devices were to protect our water system and keep it clean. But as a small business, can you afford to spend the amount of money that they require? I think those are decisions that we have to talk about. One size does not fit all. We need to make sure that the system is streamlined. And as a mayor and as on council, when you had an issue, you came in, I would sit down, listen to the issue, and I would get to the appropriate department to make sure we could find a way to resolve the issues. But streamlining is a new term we need to start using.
What about a one-minute question? Did you have
something? I just wanted you to get out your information on how to contact you. And then I did have one question afterwards, and that was Prop 2. Okay, do we really need to have a proposition to block one gas station from a specific neighborhood? I mean, come on, that's really a waste of taxpayers' money.
Well, I think it's a constitutional right.
It is a constitutional right. I'm not going to argue that.
Yeah, and I'm not going to argue what the parts are, but let me tell you that I believe that I've had that current gas station owner that's looking for the new one be in front of me in my district. They tend to buy mid-block, which becomes problematic. And for me, that's the bigger issue, is safety and the fact that they are mid-block.
But isn't that a zoning issue?
Okay. But it is. But it's a constitutional right, if you don't like something we vote on, to be able to put it to the ballot.
And how do we get in contact with you?
Yeah,
Peggy Neely? .com. And feel free to give us a call. We would love to hear from you, but my policies are all there. There's a website that you can find out. info@peggyneely.com is an email. I'd love to hear from people, but I'm really glad to be here today.
Do you have a phone number they can call your
602-528-3684.
One more time.
602-528-3684.
And actually, we got 2 minutes, ask you this quick question. Is what do opponents say about you, your opponents, and what do you agree with and what do you disagree with in less than a minute and a half?
All right. Well, I can tell you that I am a decisive leader, and from that it is said that I may push too hard. Well, I believe compromise requires that everyone comes to the middle. So for me, it's your word is your bond, and it's being a decisive leader. We need a leader now. We don't need someone that's going to tell both sides what they want to hear.
Nice.
Well said.
Well said, yeah.
Thank you so much, Peggy Neely.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm proud to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussions with four of the candidates for Mayor of Phoenix. And that would be Greg Maddox, who will be right in at 3:30. We'll be right back.
At Beerum Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerum Baum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is What's Up Phoenix, starring Chris Gregg. I get to say it like 3 to 4 times today, Chris.
I think actually it's starring the mayoral candidates, really.
That's right. They're all stars, and you're a star. And, of course, in studio, Don Goldwater. Don.
What's up?
Yeah, hey, that's good. Didn't you teach him that?
Yeah, we had a private session out in the hallway.
Well, that is that's right. I did see you practicing that, so you're going to do that.
You've got to really stick your tongue out.
That's right. So, anyway, let's welcome Claude Maddox to the show.
Hey, gentlemen, how is everybody today?
We are great. We saw you, of course, at the debate at the Rotary 100. Yeah. It was fantastic.
That was fun.
That was fun. Thank you very much
that.
For doing that. We really appreciate
sure,
it.
Sure, I thought that was awesome. A good venue. Mm-hmm. It was excellent conversation, and I thought that you got a good taste of the difference between the candidates.
And there are differences, and that's why we have you on again, so everyone can give their opinion and what they would do as mayor. But let's start off like this. Who are you? And just some background so listeners can get familiar with who you are.
Well, it's Claude Maddox, and I'm going to spell it because they misspelled it at the Rotary. It's M-A-T-T-O-X, so if you see any other spelling, don't vote for that person. It's the wrong guy. I've lived in Phoenix since 1979. My wife, Sherry, and I moved out here in 79, and we have lived out here. And I'm on the city council. I represent the West Phoenix, Maryvale area. We've lived in that West Phoenix community since we moved out here. So over 30 years of living in Phoenix and in the West Phoenix area specifically. Sherry and I have been small business owners, both of us real estate agents. We owned a real estate property management company as well as sales. And Sherry, up until a few months ago, was a designated broker of the business, but we have now sold the property management business, and which I'm very proud of because that business grew by about 40% in this economy. And some folks really wanted to get in on that action, so to speak. So she sold it. We have now purchased a used bookstore in the same area that we live in, which is
Borders?
No. We were a little smarter than that. No, it was just a small used bookstore. So I like to think that we put Borders out of business. But the truth of the matter is that we're trying to rebuild that business. And so still involved with the small business side. I've been on the city council. As I mentioned, I was elected back in 2000 and have been on the council during that period of time and have enjoyed all of the activities. And that's why I want to run for mayor. I enjoy the job. I think I've had a very positive effect on my community and been involved in what I think has been one of the best eras in the city of Phoenix as far as growth and development are concerned, capitalizing on some great projects. And I think we've only scratched the surface on the potential for this city. And that's why I'm really interested in being the next mayor, because I really want to push that forward.
You know, if you don't mind, I'd like to actually ask the first question, because you've mentioned it several times about jobs and being a small business owner. And so instead of saying what you're going to – well, just this. What is it you feel Phoenix could do to create the atmosphere, as everyone keeps saying. It's not the government doesn't make jobs. Okay, so they don't make jobs. So what is it you can do better than the people in office now to make an atmosphere palatable to people to land their business in Phoenix or the surrounding cities of Arizona?
Well, being one of those people that are in office now, it's really building on what we have already done. We've got a huge infrastructure that's in place. We've got a light rail system. Whether you agree with it or not, it's there. We have a light rail system that should be supporting a lot of dense development along that light rail line. We have great freeway systems throughout the city. We have infrastructure as far as physical infrastructure that is available. We've got a lot of open space in the downtown area along the light rail line. So we've got huge infrastructure that we should be tapping into. We don't necessarily, and I'm not opposed to building out, but we don't necessarily have to put new infrastructure out in the middle of nowhere because of all the infrastructure that we have there. So we have the infrastructure in place. It's really attracting businesses that want to move into, say, the center city or into some of the midtown, uptown areas and not necessarily moving out into the farther suburb areas. But as far as attraction is concerned, the thing that I keep saying is that my first focus is I want to make sure that we have a healthy businesses that are already here. I want to retain the businesses that are here. I want to help them to grow and expand. That's my first priority. And so I want to meet with the business folks in the city that are already doing business in small, medium, and large and say, what are we doing right? What can we do better? And then what do we need to change completely? And make things right there and get the local businesses to say, I heard one of your previous questions to Peggy Neely about some of the government regulations and things of that effect. We need to identify what the problems are that are preventing those businesses from being able to grow and expand, making Phoenix a business-friendly place. And I hear a lot of folks that think that Phoenix is pretty business-friendly when we talk about other cities within this region, but we can do better. And so what's it going to take to make Phoenix a more business-friendly place? Once we've identified that, once we make those changes and we have healthy businesses locally, and I'm not saying this is exclusive, then I want those businesses to go out and be our spokespersons. I want them to be out there saying, Phoenix is a place you really want to be. They get it. They understand how to do business. And as far as their supply chains, as far as their business networks are concerned, and I don't care if it's national or international, let's talk to those businesses that want to do business in the city of Phoenix. So that's going to be my focus as far as economic development is concerned. I don't know that the city of Phoenix has to be out there screaming by ourselves, come see us, we're a good place. You know, we do that. What we need to do is we really need the businesses to go out there and make those comments for us and help us to make contact with those businesses that are looking to relocate. And from my perspective, that'll help us grow our economy. But again, I'm going to go back to it. My primary interest is making sure those local businesses are healthy.
It's my understanding that those small businesses that you're talking about are overtaxed and overgoverned and are very difficult to become a small business owner. Is that on your watch?
A lot of the regulations that have been adopted aren't necessarily on my watch. They've been adopted over a long period of time. But again, I'm a small businessman. One of the most heavily regulated businesses is real estate. So, some of these are state. Some of them are local. But the bottom line on it is let's talk about it. Let's find out what's keeping you from being able to do business so that we can help you in being more successful in doing business. In some cases, I will say that we're already making changes. A lot of the things that you hear, the rhetoric of the campaign, are things that are actually in process as we speak. We've already adopted a development program where you can self-certify. You can use your own architects or engineers to certify your building. You don't have to come through the city process any longer. Your architects and your engineers have to come through the city process. They have to be approved by the city. But that saves you money, and that gets you in the ground fast. And then you get permits by inspections, which means you don't have to come down and get the permit first. You basically apply for the permit, have the inspector come out, provide you with the permit, predicated on you doing the job correctly. We can do the same type of thing with regulations as well. Do we have to have certain permits? Are some of those just antiquated? We put them in place years ago, but they don't apply anymore. Those types of things are already in the process of being reviewed. We're doing the same thing, and this was at my request through the economy subcommittee that I sit on. I said, let's look at how we can do the same types of things with some of these businesses and eliminate some of the restrictions and the hurdles that they're having to jump through. So a lot of the things that everyone else is talking about, I'm already in the process of working on.
Thank you. That's an awesome answer. Don, I think you had a question.
I've got I want to follow up on that a little bit, and then I'll get into my next question. But right now in development, stuff like that, you have multiple tiers that you have to jump through before you even get into the city. You've got the local village community that you've got to go present
to
them.
Yeah, you're talking about zoning.
Right. And then you've got to go into the district. Like I work out in Levine, so I have to go through the Levine Village Committee. They have to make a recommendation. If they recommend it, it goes to South Mountain. And then once it gets to South Mountain, then it goes into zoning. And then I have to go in front of the city council. And the best one I love was when Skip Remsa was mayor. They had passed these rules and regulations on zoning overnight, and Skip sent me down with the developers and the neighbors to compromise on something in 15 minutes. And when I came back up, he said, have you compromised? And I said, Mr. Mayor, you're asking us to buy a house sight unseen. We need to not streamline government, because that doesn't do any good. I think we need to reduce government and get these barriers out of the front. I understand that, you know, the people in the local communities and stuff like that don't want monstrosities in their backyards. I appreciate that as a landowner and as a businessman. But at the same time, when in some cases it takes 2 years to get from the start get-go on the architectural drawings to get your final building permit, that's very onerous for business communities out here, and they can't compete with that. Prescott, it takes, you know, maybe a month to do that.
Well, I can't address Prescott because I don't know what their process is. But one of the things that I have heard consistently throughout this campaign is the discussion about transparency. And, Don, what you just talked about was the transparency of our zoning process. It's onerous. I won't deny that. Going through the Village Planning Committee, meeting with the neighborhoods first, going through the Village Planning Committee, perhaps having to come back to the Village Planning Committee, going to the Planning Commission, perhaps coming back to the Village or to the Planning Commission, and then ultimately going to the City Council. By the time it gets to the City Council, those issues should be resolved. And I can't speak to the situation that you dealt with, and I don't know that I was on the council when you dealt with that.
I don't believe you were at the time, but I'm just saying these are some of the challenges that are faced.
Understand.
You know, you'll see if you drive out in the neighborhoods, you'll see a lot of developments out there that have concrete flooring and infrastructure in, but there's no building because the market went south.
Exactly.
And the developers are taking a chance that now that they've got their building permit and they've got their loan, maybe it won't be this bad of a downturn. We've got to go with this. Otherwise, we've lost all the money we put into it. The main question I want to ask you is on the format of city government. Right now, we have a city manager that does the budget, pretty much. And then he brings a summary. It's not a line item issue to the mayor and the city council. They bring a semi-summary to it, and that's all the information that you guys get to work with. I'm concerned that maybe the city manager has too much power in this issue, has enough oversight over it. Is this something we should change? Is there a way to get our elected officials more in a position where they're representing the people instead of in a position where, well, that sounds good, let's okay it, and not really understand what they're rubber stamping?
Well, first of all, I take exception to the description of rubber stamping. You as a council member can have as much information as you want. The city manager and the city departments come up with a budget. That's their responsibility. They are the operations side of the city. The city council and the mayor are, for the lack of a better description, the chairman of the board and the board of directors. Now, I don't know a lot of corporations where the chairman of the board and the board of directors get into the day-to-day management of that organization. They get a budget. They see the budget. They make a decision whether that budget is reasonable or not. It's really the corporate individuals, the president, the vice presidents, et cetera, whose responsibility it is.
As a friend of mine once said, you know, in a good economy, everybody's a genius. But when things go south, like they have in our local economy, and they'll come back up, but, yeah, the board of directors and CEOs and CFOs start to take a real hard look
I'm not denying
issues.
That.
And so here we are now, and I'm wondering if now is a good time – to take a look at how we are reviewing our budgets out there to make sure that we're not top heavy, or that, you know, should the city of Phoenix be building hotels when we're arguing about Phoenix fire and police cutting their jobs and things of that nature? And I'm not suggesting this is your issue or anybody else's issues, but, you know, we see this on the statewide issues. People come to me and go, I don't remember electing a legislator to build a football coliseum, you know, type situation. And that's what I'm kind of concerned with is, do you think that we should start taking a look at maybe our elected officials taking a stronger stance on some of these line item issues within the department heads to make sure we're spending our money wisely?
Well, again, what I will say is that you can get as much information as you want. And from my perspective, the process is fairly transparent. I mean, we go through a series of meetings discussing what's in the budget. People will tell us what they like, what they don't like. And what, being on the council for 12 years, I have heard consistently, you know, don't cut police, don't cut fire, don't cut parks, don't cut libraries, don't cut pools, don't cut after-school programs. I mean, don't cut. And then we run into a situation where we're at right now in this economy, and we're looking at $270 million in cuts. We have to start making some tough decisions. And so from my perspective, again, the city manager and staff's job is to make the recommendations for what to cut, and then it's our job to make those to make that final decision predicated on what we're hearing from the public. And if I want more information, it's a matter of asking for that information. And, you know, frankly, every bit of information I've ever asked for, I've received.
Okay. In that sense, since you mentioned, you know, $270 million and budget, as an average person, because maybe I'm not even average, but as your average Joe on the street.
I'm not even going to address that.
I think we'll have a vote at the end of the show.
More voting.
Just start calling him Six Pack.
You know, as an average person, a lot of people hear that, you know, Phoenix is broke. And then like Don saying, yeah, okay, so building hotels or whatever. But then in the same breath, I thought I've heard that Phoenix met their budget or is at budget. How does that work, and what does that mean that they've met their budget or at budget?
Well,
or?
You're kind of talking about what we had discussed last Friday at the Rotary, and we have to balance our budget every year. And I think the question that you ask me is predicated on what? Well, basically,
exactly.
It's like
thank
any
you.
Other budget. You have X amount of dollars that's going to be coming in over the course of the year. And we have a pretty good sense of how much money should be coming in over the course of the year. We know that we're going to get X amount of dollars from the state. We know we're going to get X amount of dollars from property taxes. We estimate how much we're going to get from sales taxes. We have a good idea of what we're going to get from I did say sales tax. So at any rate, you have a pot of money that we generally understand how much money we're going to be getting from. The variable is when we apply for grants from the federal government, stuff like that, we don't know what we may or may not get. So we can't necessarily add that into the budget specifically. But again, based on history, we know we're going to get X amount of dollars from the federal government as well. That's your budget. That's how much money you have to spend. So basically, at that point, we go out with a budget of services or a list of services that are available, a list of capital projects that are available, and that ultimately becomes our budget. If we find that we're not going to be able to meet that budget, in other words, we have a shortfall, then we have to start cutting or we have to start reassessing, moving the dollars to a different project, maybe a lesser project. By the end of the year, those have to balance. We have to have a zero expenses predicated on the amount of income that we have. So that's our budget. We have an idea of where we're going to be. And so over the next 12 months, and we just adopted a new budget for the next 12 months, we understand that we have X amount of dollars coming in, and these are the services that we can provide during that period of time. It's like anybody else's. It's a much larger budget, $3.5 billion. But it's like anything else. You just, you know, you have to match your income with your outflow. And, you know, if you don't, then you're going to have a huge amount of debt.
So really what you're describing is what every individual and family should be doing anyway. You got so much income, you got so much expenses. So for I know it was a sort of a rude awakening for people when they were using their homes like piggy banks with the increase in equity, false equity actually. But when the bubble burst, then people really were scrambling around trying to find, okay, where am I going to spend all these luxury items? So my question to you is, what's the top priority budget items that you must have? And is there any sort of fad or luxury items that you really don't need in the budget?
Well, the top items have consistently, and again, this is based on the budget hearings that we've gone to year after year after year.
And what is it, when you say budget hearing, the public comes?
There are public hearings. We have 15 hearings last year on our budget.
Are they well attended?
They are. They are. I mean, in some cases you may get 50, 60 people, but in some cases you get 400 or 500 people. It depends on where, and it depends on how big an issue. Like I can't remember exactly how many, but I'm going to say we had several thousand people over the course of the last 2 years that have attended our budget hearings. And that's the public budget hearings that we hold out in the city, throughout the city. Then we have numerous budget meetings that we have that are either broadcast on TV or are held in city council chambers that are open to the public as well. So when people claim that our process isn't transparent, I can't agree with that because there's too many options and opportunities to participate in the process.
So it's
but getting
really,
back to your question.
But the issue is they don't participate.
In most cases.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, in most cases, people don't take the time to get involved. To answer your question about the priorities, the public has said consistently public safety is our number one priority, police and fire. And that's become that much more important, not only when we talk about immigration, but it's also because we are now, you know, dealing with the issues of September 11th, terrorism. We know that if there's a major event, be it a man-made or a natural calamity, that we're on our own for at least 5 to 7 days. The federal government may or may not be able to respond in a rapid period. I mean, when we look and see what happened with Katrina in New Orleans, it took them quite a while to get their act together on that. Now, I'd like to think that they've learned, but the truth of the matter is we don't know whether they've learned or not, and we don't want to take the chance that they haven't. So a lot of our public safety is not just on boots on the street. It's, you know, being prepared for that major situation that may grow. So public safety is the first priority. Quality of life is huge. You know, when we talk about economic development and everyone kind of thinks, well, we don't have to have the arts and we don't have to have parks and you know, we don't have to have after-school programs and things of that effect. To the contrary, in my opinion.
I don't know anybody that feels that way, but, you know, my kids go to...
I get told about that all the time. Yeah,
well,
it's really interesting. But the bottom line on it is, my point about that is that if we want to do economic development, if we want to attract businesses here, if we want to keep businesses here, we've got to have a good education system. That's a state issue, but the city can be involved in that. We want to make sure that our neighborhoods are safe. We want to make sure that they are working with the local businesses to keep them in business. We want to make sure that we have the quality and the type of community that someone wants to relocate their family into. And so from my perspective, everything that we have in our budget is important. I don't think that we have a lot of fat anymore because we have been cutting the budget for so many years. I've been on the council, as I said, for 12 years, and I would say that we have probably cut the budget 10 of those 12 years. You know, it might have been small cuts, but for the most part, we've been cutting our budget for 10 of those 12 years.
Just a suggestion I'd love to see, because you mentioned after-school programs, and the school started this, and I would like to see the city of Phoenix follow up. But you have organizations like the Boys and Girls Clubs of Metropolitan Phoenix and stuff like that, and partnering up with private industries and charities to take so the taxpayer is not footing the entire bill,
right,
and yet you've got proven programs that are out there. And I think these are some of the issues that government has to look at, is that government cannot be an expert in all fields. So let's participate with the experts that are out there, and we'll save a lot of money.
And actually, we are doing that. As a matter of fact, because of the fact that we had to start closing city facilities, we've actually started partnering with folks in the private sector, organizations that offer services that they can use our facilities And so for all intents and purposes, they do maintenance and they pay for the utilities and things of that effect. And we provide them with that. They provide the services. We provide the facilities. And, you know, I've been advocating for this for 3 or 4 years. A lot of our parks, our Horse Lovers Park and things of that effect, we were going to have to close it. We actually worked with the horse lovers, I call them, but those organizations that are horse groups, they are now operating that. There's a lot of ways that we can do
you
that.
You have organizations like the Boy Scouts mm-hmm. and Girl Scouts and stuff like that that might be very interested in helping out in maintaining parks and things of that nature.
Yep.
Let's get your contact information.
Sure.
How do we get a hold of you on the web? How do we get a hold of you on the phone?
The webpage is Mattox, M-A-T-T-O-X, for Mayor, and it's F-O-R-M-A-Y-O-R. I should know how to spell that, don't you think? .com. MattoxForMayor.com is the webpage. And our telephone number is 602-423-7165.
So let me ask you this. We still have about 3 minutes, roughly. And would you say there should be a shift or an emphasis on skill sets for the council people as well as the mayor and some of the staff, more strategic thinking from a business perspective? Would that be important? Because it sounds like that's what you're talking about. Strategic planning, not to be caught off guard. Look at exit strategies. Look long term. You know, run it more like a business. And I don't know, and I'm not saying you haven't. I'm just wondering if that's some of the skills that you would like to see as a mayor that's supporting your agenda.
Well, the people choose who are going to be on the council. So as far as skill sets concerned, basically what you get is sound bites. That's what decisions are made on. But ultimately you're going to find out if that person has those skill sets or not once they're in on the council. You know, I think it is important that the mayor have a business background, have an understanding in business, how it operates. But I will tell you, having been there, this does not operate like a business. There are some elements to it that are business that operate like a business. But when you're working with the federal government, when you're working with other governments, it's a whole different world. I mean, there's so many strings attached to the monies that you're working with. And we have to be more transparent than the private sector has to be. Interestingly, we have a group. It's called the Innovation and Efficiency Task Force, and it's made up of folks from the private sector with specific skill sets. And city management personnel. And most of them came in with this attitude, I want to understand why you can't run this like a business. Well, they got in and found out that there are. It's a whole different ball game. And they are smart people. I mean, these are people that are top of their game in business, and they're now understanding how complicated being in government is. They have made some great recommendations. We've saved $35 million in the last year from their recommendations that this task force has done. So there are ways that we can be more efficient and more cost effective. We have a lot of I heard you talking about the Berkshire report. We have several efficiency studies that are in process as we speak. We've reorganized the organization, which is certainly a business deal, to make it run more efficiently and put those groups together that make sense to put together. We're transforming the city. I mean, I think I mentioned the other day, you know, we've got a balanced budget. We've got a AAA budget or AAA rating on our bonding, which is the highest of six large cities in the country. You know, smallest government in 40 years. We've got 25-year low in crime. We've saved $35 million in efficiencies. This government's doing a good job.
Well, thank you so much. Perfect timing. We're out of time. And Claude Maddox.
Thanks a lot.
Claude.
Thank you.
Claude Maddox.
And just don't call me late for dinner.
Yeah, give us your contact information one more time.
Okay. It's MaddoxForMayor.com. And the telephone number is 602-423-7165. Vote for Claude Maddox on August 30th.
Thank you so much for coming in.
And, nice to meet you guys.
Chris Gray and Don Goldwater, thank you for coming in. And very nice meeting you.
Appreciate it.
And we'll see everyone tomorrow for the Green Roundtable and the Bottom Line. It's going to be a great program. And, again, we're trying to arrange a debate the fourth Tuesday from 2 to 4 with the same great candidates, all six. And hopefully we'll get confirmation. Everyone have a great night. See you tomorrow.